From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Delighted to be back in London at Wise Buddha Studio to meet Natasha Barnes. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Hello.
And you're celebrating a brand new album called Real, which I've been playing in the car for a few days, and it keeps growing and growing on me, which is brilliant.
Oh, that's lovely.
You sing such a wide variety of songs on there, which I think is noticeable straight away.
Yeah, they've all got me in common, I suppose.
Yes.
They are certainly an eclectic mix of sort of everything that I hold dear in music.
When I played it, and I always like to look at songwriters, and it also proves what a brilliant songwriter Paul O'Duffy is, because he's written some fantastic songs.
He is wonderful. He's a master collaborator, and he gets the best out of people. And I definitely learned that working with him as my producer. He got the best out of me straight away. He knew how to do it straight away somehow.
He's sort of, he's produced, he's done everything on there, hasn't he, really, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
So, I come from the Isle of Wight, and you come from Ringwood, which is not that far away.
It's not. I can see you from the coast.
Yeah. I love coming to Ringwood. I came once to review a show for the stage, and it's like an old, it was a theatre, but it was like an old church or something.
Oh,
it was absolutely lovely. But Ringwood's a nice place, isn't it, really?
It's lovely. It's a lovely little part of the world, and I'm currently sort of spending a lot of time there. I will always go back.
It's still in Hampshire because unfortunately they moved Bournemouth from Bournemouth into Dorset, didn't
they? Yeah, they did. Yeah, so we're right on the cusp, but we still remain Hampshire. I was born in Dorset, but I'm a Hampshire girl. So,
good, pleased to hear it. I know you went to Bournemouth, the Little Big Theatre School, didn't you, from a very early age, really?
Yeah, I went to Big Little from about 6 years old.
Wow.
And I was there until I was 17, and then I went straight off into the West End, so it was a huge part of my life.
I mean, some people don't decide what they want to do until they're older, but when you sort of started there, when you were like 5 and 6, did you know then that's what you hoped to do?
I think I loved telling stories and pretending to be somebody else when I was 5 or 6. Whether or not I computed that I had to earn money one day and that might be a way to do it, I'm not sure. I think it took a couple of years to get around to that bit. But I think it was more that, you know, my parents sort of just went, we've got to do something with this energy of this child that loves telling stories and is always watching Disney films and old musicals. So I really grew there. I grew into a person, and I consider myself incredibly lucky to never have had another option. I only ever wanted to do something to do with performance. So I'm lucky to have never sort of diverted.
When you were in Bournemouth, you did quite a few sort of in-house shows, didn't you, really?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did a lot.
Did you do Anne Frank while you were there?
Yeah, with the Bournemouth Little Theatre Club, I did. I played Anne in Anne Frank when I was 13. And actually, the man that was meant to be playing Otto Frank was offered a job travelling into the States. So he pulled out at the last minute, and my dad was drafted in to play Otto Frank. So yeah, we did that together, and we were in the paper together. And
was he an actor, or did he just do it?
He did a lot of National Youth Theatre, and he did a lot at uni, and he's an incredibly funny, intelligent man, my dad. And he went really method. He grew a beard for it and everything.
Did he?
Yeah. And he was just wonderful. And he used to get really annoyed at me because I never knew my lines. And then come opening night, I was word perfect, and he'd been studying for months. And it was just, but it was one of those, yeah, I almost forget that happens sometimes. But that was my first play, my first straight play.
Really? Yeah. And then at Ringwood School, I know you did quite a few things there, didn't you, really?
Pretty much every year I got my hands into Ringwood School, and I love it, and I still go back, and they've just done Beauty and the Beast.
Have they?
Yeah, I mean, they do incredible shows. It's so lovely to come from such a wonderful part of the world where performing art is championed, and there's so much for youngsters to do. And I've come back recently to do a bit of teaching for Big Little Theatre School because they're such a great part of my sort of heritage and who I am, and you know, they're part of my legacy and I'm part of theirs, hopefully. So
school productions, I remember going to see a production where my daughter went to school on the Isle of Wight, and they did Godspell.
Oh wow.
And it was one of the finest shows I've ever seen.
Yeah,
amazing, you know.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, you when you're in your school putting a school production together, you're tapping into talent that is raw. Nothing is tampered with it. It is a child's instinct, and there is nothing quite like it.
Now, me being old, you see, I'm lucky in the respect that I can remember Marilyn Monroe, Judy Garland, Doris Day, all people that influenced you. But yeah. I feel privileged to have been around when they were sort of at the peak of their fame, really. Those old stars, they're still looked on with great awe, aren't they, by
Absolutely.
Young people?
Absolutely. I mean, well, I kind of want to interview you now because I want to know everything you know. I have such a fascination with them, especially with Judy Garland and Vivian Leigh. I love Vivian Leigh, Elizabeth Taylor, and I think that they were incredible. They kept going in a way that a lot of young people today don't realise how to keep going through adversity the way that they did.
All I'm going to say is that during my life, I've interviewed 4,000 people from showbiz, so I have been rather lucky.
Wow.
in a way, your sort of career was in parallel with Laura Michelle Kelly, who came from the Isle of Wight, obviously.
Yes.
Started on the Isle of Wight. Now, she didn't go to a drama school. She queued up around the block for an audition for Beauty and the Beast. And in a way, that's how you got in, wasn't it? By just going up for an audition. Really.
I went for an open audition at 18 to get a bit of audition experience, and then I got the job accidentally. And Laura, I'm a massive fan of Laura, and I love that she is now across the pond doing the big stuff in Broadway. I think she's incredible. She's a wonderful, wonderful performer.
I remember going to see her in local shows, and she was just in the chorus at that particular time.
Wow.
You know, and then, but she's unspoiled. She's just the same now as she was when she was younger. She's, you know, which is good, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think when you don't go to drama school, you kind of, at the time, you're wary of that fact and you feel like it makes you less of a performer. But actually what it does is it makes you more of a performer, because there's no ethos, there's no label that isn't you. I've created my own work ethic, and I've taught myself and learnt from people around me, and I'm proud of my work because of that.
You planned a gap year and you were going to work in Waitrose, is that right?
That is right, yes.
Is it?
I was going to work in Waitrose.
Would you have been good in Waitrose?
Oh, I don't know. I'm very good in Waitrose now. I get to buy everything. Yes, I was going to, I'd gotten into Mount View Theatre School, but I wanted to do straight theatre. So I was going to reapply, take a gap year, earn some money, go and see a lot of shows, listen to a lot of music, and try again and try and get somewhere to do straight acting. And in order to get a little bit more audition experience, I went to an open audition for a show that had come over to the West End from Broadway and was looking for a brand new original London cast. And I accidentally got the job and moved. I think I got the job, and then I moved in November and started then. So I had about 6 weeks before I moved to London.
Was that Spring Awakening?
Yes, yeah, that was Spring Awakening.
So fond memories for you then?
Hugely. It was the first of a few fairy tale moments in my life and career, I think.
You did chess as well?
I did chess, which I was thinking about just the other day, because obviously chess is making a reappearance this year. And it was the most wonderful show, and we made sense of it in a way that it hadn't been made sense of before. And I got to play Svetlana, but I'm eagerly awaiting the day that I can play Florence, because I love all her songs as well. I just wanted to do that.
Wonderful songs, isn't
it? Yeah, beautiful. I mean, yeah, stunning.
Years ago, if someone had said they were going to write a musical about chess, you know, you think, how boring. But the show wasn't boring, was it?
Not at all. It was. I mean, the backdrop of the Cold War did sort of help, I suppose, in a way. But it's a flawed musical, and I love flawed musicals. I was lucky enough to play Mabel in Mac and Mabel with the London Musical Theatre Orchestra at the end of last year. And again, that is another flawed show where the music is incredible and faultless. And it's the chess is very similar. You know, there's a lot of musical theatre out there that's faultless.
Mac and Mabel, it's never been the big hit in England or Great Britain that it should be, because there's amazing songs, aren't they?
They are incredible. I think it's never been classed as a hit anywhere, because it's the story is it's finding a way to tell that story. The book is flawed in a way, but the music is incredible, and I love singing the songs. And if they ever do it properly, I would love to play Mabel, really get under the skin of the character, because she's ever such fun. She reminds me of Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl.
Yeah. Lend Me a Tenor.
Yeah, another one. Well, my first farce, that was.
Was it?
Yeah, and I had a wonderful time working with Matthew Kelly in town, and it was my second West End show, so it was kind of the show that made me realise it wasn't a fluke that I'd gotten the first one, and that I was sort of here to stay and I could make a career out of this and give it a go. And I understudied the fabulous Cassidy Jansen, who is now a huge star in her own right. And she was wonderful, and we stayed in touch, and it's been wonderful. We sort of follow each other's careers.
And Matthew Kelly, I love him. I've interviewed him, I don't know, four or five times. And
he's great, isn't he?
He's fantastic. He always comes up with something different, and he's a genuine nice guy, isn't he?
He is. He's wonderful to work with as well. Endlessly patient and very funny.
Funny Girl, in a way, changed your life, didn't it? Because firstly at the Chocolate Factory, and then obviously at the Savoy Theatre. But what I like about you, I know you were understudy initially to Sheridan, but you didn't come through via TV reality show, did you? You came through on your own sort of theatre ability, really, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of perseverance and a few right place at right time. But it's my dad always used to say it's what you do with the opportunity once you get it. It's is the sort of telltale factor of success. And I think with Funny Girl, it was another job, and it was a chance to understudy somebody that I could learn from. And I took it on as a learning experience. I was very excited. I thought I might get on once or twice. And I never thought that the media furor that would ensue and the launch pad that it proved to be, I never thought that would happen. And I was incredibly lucky to have that happen and to be ready for it physically and mentally, I think. I just about withstood it, and then was very, very tired afterwards.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm always a great fan of Sheridan, and I can remember she came to the Isle of Wight, and I went to her hotel in the morning, had breakfast and did an interview, and very unspoiled, just a natural lady, really, which is terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what I relate to the most, I think, about a lot of people. The wonderful lady that wrote My Single Supermodel, Rebecca Ferguson, is a completely untarnished, natural, real woman, and also a mum, and I love her very much. I think she's amazing.
That's an amazing song, that.
Oh, thank you.
I love it, because every time you hear it, it gets better and better and better.
Well, it's a vulnerable song. The message is vulnerability, and it's about being flawed and feeling flawed and having insecurities, and I don't think there's enough of that out there, and it's nice to put a voice to that track, yeah.
So, Natasha, standing ovations. I always love it when I see a deputy come on, an understudy, and they do so well, and everyone just stands. I've done it a few times. It must be fantastic for the person that's standing on stage, really.
Well, you never take it for granted, especially when you're an understudy. And I used to go through a roller coaster every night, every show with Funny Girl, where the show would begin with tonight's performance, the role of Fanny Bryce would be played by Natasha Barnes, and then you'd hear, oh... And you'd hear discord and disappointment, and then you'd hear the beautiful overture, and you'd steel yourself, and you'd walk out on that stage, and you'd go, right, give me 20 minutes, and hopefully I'll have won you over by people. By the time we get to the song People, I hopefully will have got you by then. And to go from that disappointment to an audience on their feet, which happened every single time. I never didn't get one on the tour or town, which was, and nor did Sheridan, which is incredible. It must be something to do with the part, I guess, or the music, the uplifting ending, I'm not sure. But to raise people to their feet in a celebration when they've started out so disappointed is something that I will never, ever forget. And I was so glad that I could be a part of a show that could do that.
Did you play it with Imelda Staunton in mind, how she would have played it? Is that a sort of...
I think maybe subconsciously, because a lot of critics then sort of... I think it was Mark Shenton said that I was a bit Judy Garland and a bit Imelda Staunton, which is possibly just the most wonderful sentence I think anyone has ever said, like, aimed at me anyway, because I love those two human beings and their work. I'd been to see Imelda Staunton a few months before I got the job understudying Sheridan, so I went to see her in Gypsy, and I remember being caught totally off guard. And you know when you sort of loud cry, you're sobbing, you've got a sob trapped in your chest. It was that sort of illicit response. And usually, as an actress, I'll go to the theatre quite hard nosed and be quite critical, just because I know how it all works. But she just takes you away, and she's real, and she's not vain. There's no vanity in her performance. There's just realness and intellect, and I love it. And if I can be anything like that, I would be incredibly happy.
You've been in a West End thriller too, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, an off-West End thriller, yeah, I have. Yeah, a play.
Did you enjoy that?
I loved it. I just found out I was pregnant, so I was suffering with morning sickness at the time.
Oh.
It was an hour and a half straight through, and once you were on, you were never off, and it was a two-hander. So it was so intellectually challenging for me, and it kept me so busy. It's only whet my appetite for more now. I just want to do more acting. I'm quite enjoying this sort of idea that I have this album, so I have my music love kind of taken care of, and I love doing the straight acting at the same time. And, you know, obviously I will first and foremost always enjoy amalgamating the two in musical theatre, but having those two separate routes has been incredibly, like, creatively rewarding so far.
As it's worked out for you, because you did the Palladium Panto, didn't you?
I did.
Well, when I was younger, they used to run till June. They were about 6 months. Yes. So you were lucky because you might have had a problem if it had run till June.
Goodness me. Yeah. I mean, well, I did the Panto. It wasn't this Christmas gone. It was the one before. And it was the first one in 40 years, and it was the big Panto return, and I don't think any Panto could ever top it for me personally, just because it was the cherry on top of a crazy year, and I was working alongside people that I adore and admire and that I keep in touch with to this day. We thought it lasted ages, lasting till the end of January, but yes. June, that's really rocked my boat. That I can't get my head around that.
There's a few from your Panto that I love, and I've interviewed Julian Clary, who's fantastic, isn't he?
He is absolutely wonderful.
What I like about him, you walk in to see him and you barely recognise him because you're so used to seeing him on stage and how he dresses, and you'd almost walk by him in the street. When I told him that, he said, "That's what I want."
Yeah, that's his name. Yeah.
And Lee Mead, I like Lee Mead.
He's lovely. He's another normal person. Yeah, just somebody that is just a. He's got his own values, his own life outside of his work, and he loves his work, and he's great at it. And I've got a lot of time for him.
And Paul Zerdan, I've known for a long, long time. Did you go out with the puppet? Did you have a little spot with the puppet?
Yeah, I had a spot with the puppet. That puppet. I never knew what that puppet was going to do. And I used to try and just, you know, not. I used to tread on eggshells around Paul because I knew that if I did anything to upset him, I'd get it in the neck
yes,
from the puppet.
You would, yeah. And of course, very charismatic. When I go and talk to ladies' theatre groups and mention Nigel Havers, they all sort of swoon and whatever.
What is it? My mum calls him the thinking woman's crumpet.
Yes, exactly.
He's wonderful. Like I would love to do a play with Nigel to see the real actor in him, because he's what makes him so special is that he can laugh at himself.
Yes, he can. I was just going to say that he doesn't take himself seriously.
No.
He'll have a go at anything, and whatever he does, he's good at, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doc Martin, I love that series.
That was my first bit of proper telly, that, yeah. And it was my first scene was in a tiny, tiny room in a small house in Port Isaac with a five-month-old crying baby, six-foot Martin clones, and then eight camera crew. And it was the most surreal experience I think I've ever had. And I had to talk with one of those West Country accents, so it was a lot like that. And I was playing a teen mother. And I got this amazing baby called Todd, who was an extra baby. He was really chilled out. And it was amazing. And Martin Clunes is the nicest man.
Yes, he is. And that street where the sort of surgery, very narrow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tiny. It's so hilly as well. And I think I stayed in the Slipway Hotel, which was the only hotel in Port Isaac. I was there for about 2 weeks. And you had to walk about 40 minutes to the top of the hill to get any signal on your mobile phone.
Right.
Which for a girl who was 19 at the time is utterly traumatic. And there were only two channels on the telly. So it was a real experience. But I loved it. I'd do it every day of the week if I could.
And you've done Doctors as well, haven't you?
I have. There's a medical theme going on.
Yes.
yeah, I did Doctors as well. That's a rite of passage, I think, for every actor.
Looking ahead, are you hoping to do more sort of TV as well as live theatre?
Yes, I'd love to. I feel like I really like cut my chops on acting, doing Funny Girl, and then going into doing the play, doing Trist. And I've sort of figured out that I am a performer outside my voice, which is wonderful because it makes my voice better and it also makes my acting better.
I think you've been very clever on this album because you could have used three or four songs from Funny Girl, but you've only used the one song, haven't you? Which
yeah.
I think is a nice idea for you because people can listen to you singing different sorts of songs, really.
Yes, and I mean, the choice to put people on the end of the album, I would like to say that it's confessional. It's me singing the song the way I want to sing it, and it's almost a separate entity from the musical, but it's an ode to what brought me to the point of making an album. I love that song. It was one of my grandparents' favourite songs, and, well, they always said I'd be a big star one day, etc., and I don't consider myself a big star, but I certainly consider myself lucky to work in the West End. And they were sadly not with us. My granddad passed away a week before I first went on for Funny Girl, so he never quite got to see it either, and it's a song for them as much as for the show. It's personal.
And there's one or two older songs that you somehow got hold of.
Yes.
Because, you know, being quite old, I thought, I knew a lot of songs, but there's some on there which were written a few years ago that I didn't click on to, but I love them when I listen to them,
There's a Northern Soul element to it, and what I love the history of Northern Soul. I love the link into British heritage that it has. I love the idea that there is there's two or three songs on there that were only made, you know, famous in this country because a couple of DJs from the Wigan area went over to San Francisco and LA and trawled through record stores and picked up vinyls that had never quite made it to mainstream Motown radio play. And they brought them back, and they had huge, huge halls of people dancing up and down the country. And that is like, Northern Soul is amazing. And it's no way me saying I can do Northern Soul. It's me paying homage to that because I think it's wonderful. And I love that Motown sound. And I love the big brass of my first track, You Don't Mean It. And
great intro, that.
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely track.
And people can go to your website and they can actually listen to little bits, can't they, if they wish?
Yes.
Which is a great idea, I think, because it's been fantastic so far. What's your big dream? When you walk out of here in a few minutes or an hour or so's time, have you got one really big dream you'd like to do for the future, really?
To keep climbing this ladder that I'm on, to keep going, and to keep doing it with integrity and as a real human being, and not, you know, giving. I want to continue making an example that people can do something if they are normal. You don't have to conform to an image. You can be who you are, and you can still do well in your chosen profession. And I know that sounds cliche, but that is genuinely what I feel best about, is that I've reached a certain level of success so far that I'm really proud of, and I've done it with integrity.
Any young people listening to this, obviously you're a great advert because you didn't go to a posh drama school, did you? You just queued up like Laura Michelle Kelly.
No, and my dad wasn't a producer, and I didn't have any links to the... I'm the only theatrical one in my family, really. I mean, we're all theatrical in a way, but I'm the only one that ever wanted to do it professionally. I've done it because I love it. And there's nothing that's helped me other than my love for it and my family, obviously.
I bet the Bournemouth School, I reckon they sort of must say, well, look, she started with us and she ended up in the West End. It's a great advert for people that join them, isn't
it?
Yes, really?
Absolutely. And there's lots of people that go on to work professionally that go to Big Little. And I went back and sang with them actually only a few months ago. I sang at their anniversary concert, and I will always go back because I love meeting kids that want to go into it, and I love giving advice because I'm finally in a position to give advice and feel like I've earned that position.
Natasha, thanks for your time. It's much appreciated.
Thank you so much.
I know it's a busy day for you, and I wish your career continued success.
Thank you.
Keep looking on the Isle of Wight Radio website, the John Hannam website, and YouTube for more John Hannam Meets new interviews. Bye-bye for now. Isle of Wight Radio.